Coming up on Patriots This Week, escape from New York.
It's always a dogfight coming in, and just coming out with a victory is huge.
Proud of the way the team competed.
Against the city that never sleeps, the Patriots needed a wake-up call.
High stepping into the end zone.
Terrible coverage. You're getting smoked.
I wish we'd have done better. I think I'm always a little edgy out there, so.
That was indisputable until Malcolm was in the middle, changing the fortunes of the Patriots again.
I don't like playing the Jets. It's tough, man. But, we came through.
Coming through Foxborough this week, the Atlanta Falcons in a primetime Super Bowl rematch.
You got to worry about the Falcons this year, this week, right now.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
Upon further review, it would not be the Pats and the Jets in Jersey if the game didn't go down to the wire with a bit of controversy included. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Patriots This Week. Bob Soucy with my radio partner from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, Scott Zolak, and Matt Chatham, a three-time Super Bowl champion for the Patriots. And guys, we'll begin with the start of the game. Not so good for the Pats. They found themselves in arrears by 14. How did they get to that point against the Jets?
I think they played terribly. You know, to play terribly, especially on defense. You know, miscommunications, again, some of the stuff that you had earlier in the year where we thought they'd settle down. Let's not forget, though, Bademosi got the start opposite Malcolm Butler, with Stephon Gilmore being what I consider a surprise inactive. Wasn't on an injury report all week. Had headaches. I guess it was written in sort of in concussion protocol. So something to monitor as we go on. He's thrust into that spot. But I thought after a while the defense settled down nicely. I think the pace of the game, New England was not ready for early, specifically in that first quarter.
They had four third down conversions on that first drive. So it's as if they were prepared for it. They were ready for it. They didn't necessarily execute. I think one of the worst of them was as they'd gotten to midfield, you know, both ends are way up the field past the quarterback. The Dublin Flowers on the inside, and McCown just jogs for another first down. So a lot of it wasn't executing what they already knew going into the game plan. But other than that, I sort of had to put it in context. It was a terrible first drive, and you play really good on first and second down actually to get to all these nice third down distances, but you blew it on all those.
The third and tens. Giving up.
You love those, right? Yeah. But they did give up the two scores early, right? So it's two touchdowns on the board. But what followed that is, you know, sort of the metal part. And that's the good part, the part you like. I believe it was like three punts that followed, then two interceptions, then the questionable fumble there at the goal line. So it's play bad, fix yourself, play better, and win in situationally.
A second straight year, the Malcolm Butler in the Meadowlands makes a game-turning play with a turnover forced. Last year, he punched out a ball that got the Pats going down 10-0. This year, after they fell behind 14-0, it's 14-7 when he comes up with that pick after a missed field goal to set up the game-tying score just before halftime.
Yeah, we watched McCown warm up early before the game, and it's just a big windup. But I thought Malcolm did a good job reading the arm motion. So he planted that left foot, broke on it, picked it off, and the way they didn't want to handle things, the way they wanted to handle things offensively, end the half with the field goal didn't happen. But Malcolm bailed the offense out, bailed Gostkowski out, setting them up again. And to go in 14 apiece, getting the ball back to start that second half, that's where the game turned. I really thought the game turned on the Malcolm Butler interception, because then you have all the momentum. Then you come out, you try and start a drive, get it going, and you take advantage of what you did by deferring.
And that's part of a run of 24 unanswered points, and it really got going with Brady to Gronkowski.
Gronkowski's back, boys. He is back, and I'm so excited about it. Buzz Lightyear's back to big hands. That third and 10 throw, the third and 10 throw to him up the seam where he's completely covered, put it right at the helmet, and it's the Mickey Mouse hands, those big white gloves. He took it, but more importantly, not only does he catch it, he runs. He's starting to run. He's starting to swat people. He's starting to step out of tackles. And you could just see him get excited on the sidelines. And that's the guy we need. We don't need tentative Rob. Tentative Rob is not good for this offense. Explosive Rob is.
Well, and there's two things here. The difficulty in covering a guy, getting the ball to him, but then after he got it.
They can't cover him. And the stupid refs with the stupid calls. I mean, I know the first one was ticky-tack. That could have went either way.
No.
Or the non-call. That's ridiculous. I am so tired of the way the game is refereed because of his size. And that's not his fault. He's 6'7", and he's a wrecking ball. So
exactly. And Lee sort of running up his pocket. I mean, that was clearly a pass interference not called. And then you had the two on Dorsett where he's getting his bicep turned. And that was a game turner for the Jets. I mean, let's be honest, good by Screen.
Screen's a pretty salty veteran. And, you know,
Ty Law used to do that.
You just play a little pull at the arm.
But it was
you could get away with
it. It was clear that it happened. But
yeah.
My major point here, though, is with Gronk. It's covering him is one part of the problem. But to know that he's healthy, to kind of Zoe's point, the explosiveness after the catch. He ran away from the safety. He didn't just – he juked him in open space, and then
he's
the first
covered,
two strides
he is always open.
Couldn't do anything to him. Yeah.
All right, before we get to officials and the other team's tight end,
they stink.
We got to ask you about the 5'8", Deion Lewis. We're talking about big Rob Gronkowski. How big was Deion Lewis at 5'8", running the ball for the Patriots?
We were down in, I think, Dallas when he made five guys miss in that 10-yard little box on the touchdown. I thought that was his best game, potentially, as a Patriot. I thought this was by far his best game because of everything that he did. Good leg churn, stepping out of tackles, hitting and spinning. I thought the fact that they went regular is big here in this game. I wish that they would commit a little bit more to it. And you say commit to it. You want to commit to the run.
Then later, something irregular in the eyes of many, especially Jets fans. Pats have a 10-point lead. Jets are driving. They've got it inside the five. They score an apparent touchdown to Austin Seferian Jenkins. Would have been his second of the day. Great effort by Daron Harmon to hold him up, and Malcolm Butler.
Great awareness by the defense. Great awareness by the defense and Malcolm communicating to Bill that the ball was out.
Yeah, and I think...
How'd you like that rule, Mr. Smart Guy?
It's the right application of the rule.
You thought that was a good call?
It's a good call. It's a dumb rule. So here's the point that I think we have to sort of back ourselves up, right? We've been going through an era here it's been 4 or 5 years now where this notion of possession has been everyone's obsession, right? The bar for possession is so freaking high, it's very difficult to do it. Now, if you knew that you had lost possession and needed to prove that you then had it, you're going to need to be a little further out than about 6 inches from the goal line. There's not enough time to prove possession, especially when you switch arms as you go to the ground. You don't have it. So that was the correct call. He did not have possession, and by virtue, if he'd have pinned it against himself and kept it with that arm, you might just give him the benefit of the doubt, but you know he didn't have it because he had to switch. So that's the correct call. But what was so sort of perverse to people is the notion that the Patriots then get it and get 20 yards of field position as well. That just doesn't make sense. So, again, I think what I overlooked here, and I'm glad that we hit on it, was the really great defensive play that made this happen.
What if that's Rob Gronkowski there? I'm kicking helmets here the next day if the other team gets the ball because Rob's trying to score, doesn't actually drop the ball on the ground, is fighting. Yeah, it gets moves around the cavity area of the body. If that ball's staying here and it doesn't hit the ground, that ball's either a touchdown or it should be on a one-inch line to me.
So is this going to irk Patriots fans because they're going to make a rule change based off something that would happen with you? And this wouldn't have happened if this was a Jets-Browns game. If you're going to want to lose possession and regain it, go do it out in the middle of the field. Don't do it as you're hanging over the pylon. There's just simply not time.
It's a good teaching element for both. For defense to keep always playing, and for offense, protect the damn ball.
Reminds me of a play Butler made against Odell Beckham Jr. in that same stadium a couple of years ago.
Right.
It was ruled a touchdown initially. Let's talk about the defense, though, because that replay review overshadowed what I thought was progress by the defense up front with Malcolm Brown and even Alan Branch answering the bell and giving the Patriots some quality reps after being left home for Tampa Bay. Then there was the complimentary work of the pressure on the quarterback and the coverage by the secondary late. I know they gave up some big plays, but Kyle Van Noy leading that pass rush for the Patriots late.
Yeah, Van Noy, Marsh, Roberts on the field at the same time, along with Butler as a down guy.
Yeah.
Hightower. It's not perfect for him, right? You look at those names, you say, this is not the perfect defense we want. Malcolm Brown had his best game, I think, as a Patriot. I thought he was disruptive. It's good to see Branch back. Meaning, you know, hey, I'm off the radar last week. And I thought he made a couple plays in there. It wasn't perfect, but he made plays. And you and I talked about the balancing of Marsh off the bootleg and also Kyle Van Noy stretching McCown out to give them some problems in the short throws. And I think that was part of it.
I think we're starting to learn who the best configuration is, and that's what you should get to as you start hitting midseason kind of area. I think their best ends are when Wise and Flowers are at the edges.
Yep.
What's been great about Flowers is that he can move inside and like that. And Marsh,
I don't like him over the
Marsh
nose. I don't like Flowers over
the
nose.
Marsh can give you some time on the outside. He's a solid player. But the best group, got to have it. You got to have each of those guys opposite one another. Hightower back in the middle, and you've got either two of three on the inside that can work it out. But you've got a front six, not seven. But in those sub-situations, you've got guys you can go to. So I think you can start feeling better about it.
People forget, you're getting McClellan back soon. So Shay McClellan back injected into that front. You know, it's McClellan. I hear that all the time. Oh, it's Shay McClellan. Guy played well in the Super Bowl for you, okay?
Solid.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it all added up to career win number 187 for Tom Brady in the regular season, more than any other quarterback in NFL history. When we come back, I have a feeling replay review will come up in our bank shots discussion with Don Banks right after this on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments, proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. By Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots. And by Waste Management. Find out why 4 out of 5 customers recommend Waste Management for their waste disposal needs.
Now This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Kyle Van Noy. The 6'3", 243-pound linebacker out of BYU is the team's second-leading tackler and had two sacks against the Jets. Adopted as an infant, the 26-year-old has set up a GoFundMe page to help provide Christmas for 53 foster families in Boston and his hometown of Provo, Utah. The Putnam Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments. Pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
We're back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. Time to take some bank shots with our NFL insider, Don Banks. And, Don, it's another Sunday in the NFL. Another marquee player goes down. And this time it's Aaron Rodgers. How does that change the complexion of the NFC?
Well, I think it throws it wide open. There's 11 teams in the NFC, Bob, that are 500 and above through 6 weeks. Every one of them has reason to believe now, with the best player in the conference on the sideline most likely for the rest of the year, that they could still win it. And I think it does what kind of Tom Brady's injury in 2008 did for the AFC that season.
Well, you've got a quarterback in New York in Eli Manning who's won two Super Bowl championships but was winless before the Giants dominated the Denver Broncos. Some have suggested a possibility that maybe New York will shop him around. Would the Mara and Tisch families ever go for that?
I spoke to a longtime Giants player, a headline name last week, anonymously for a different story. Asked him exactly that. He said there's no way John Mara is ever going to deal Eli Manning. Those two Super Bowl rings mean too much to him, too much to his family. Whereas Wellington Mara, his father, had the two early Super Bowls in 86 and 90. These are John Mara's babies, they said. He said it would be like dealing his own son away. Eli Manning's going to finish his career as a Giant.
Meanwhile, there's an outcry from the other team that shares MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, the New York Jets and their fans, because of the overrule of an apparent touchdown by Austin Seferian Jenkins. What are the long-term implications for that particular kind of play, the touchback on a fumble through the end zone?
Here's my point, Bob. If Al Riveron, the director of officials, comes out and says it was clear-cut, the reason to overturn, and Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino, the past two director of officials, now on television, say it wasn't. If they don't have consensus, how can the fans, the players, and the coaches have any faith in the system as it is constituted? I didn't see enough evidence to overturn. I don't think the average fan, player, or coach did either. And when you have really three men who were trained to see things very similarly, differ that much, you have a problem if you're the NFL.
A lot of people are doing double takes when I look at the statics and see who's at the top and who's not, as expected. Who's the biggest disappointment in the league right now?
I have to go with the Oakland Raiders. This is a team that went 12-4, was supposed to have a young franchise quarterback coming into his own in his prime. I think this is a team that has lost its identity, not using Lynch very well in the running game, and I don't think it knows what it does well right now.
I find it interesting, too, that Jack Del Rio was retweeting articles about the direction of the Raiders' offense, which I found interesting. Not sure if he's trying to convince the fans that things will get turned around, or perhaps his players, or maybe even himself.
Yeah, I think there's some confusion going on in Oakland right now. And there's a lot of disappointing teams, but to me, Oakland is number one.
Don, thanks as always. Don Banks with our Bank Shots. Back with more Scott and Matt right after this on Patriots This Week.
All right, time now for your Zone Show. The high-flying Atlanta Falcons coming to town with a brand-new offensive coordinator. We're going to talk about Matty Ice, Devontae Freeman, maybe Julio Jones. No, we're going to talk about Austin Hooper. Who? This guy right here, tight end, 6'3", 245. Why? He's the forgotten one, and I'm going to show you why. Look, everybody's covering all these guys, and then all of a sudden you forget about the 6'3" tight end. And by the way, he's got some nice moves to him. He's one of those nice, compact tight ends. He's not a big Rob Gronkowski type. Here you go, bottom of the screen. Freeze it right there. What do they like to do? They like to go vertical. They love to run digs, combo routes. And here we go, forgetting about the tight end in the middle again. Boom. Nice spot right there by Matt Ryan. Now, the offense isn't putting up the production that they were last year. And here we go, last one. Take a look at this one down here on the end. You know, little stutter step. Look at this guy coming free. The big tight end, Austin Hooper. What'd they say about Hooper and Jaws? Hooper, you're going to need a bigger boat. There's your Zoe Show.
The Zoe Show is presented by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
We're back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios, and Zoe with the timeless Jaws reference. Now let's refer to the Atlanta Falcons, of course, same two franchises who met in Super Bowl 51, first overtime Super Bowl in NFL history. Not exactly the same teams, but nonetheless, a lot of familiar faces in the black and red.
Yeah, Thursday, big Thursday day this past week. They dedicated to the ball, so that's like a big thing down there. It's kind of the cheesy thing about the Falcons and their head coach. But new offense coordinator, I think that's the key. Steve Sarkisian, up big on Miami, 17 points. Slowly allow them to come back. They don't look like they're doing the same things when they go with the double split backs, that pony formation. You know, Patriots, when they put Deion Lewis and James White in the game, they have good backs. Like, Freeman can fly. I'd like to see him as a one-back guy. I don't know why they're beating their heads with the two-back set, because they have so much talent on the outside. The ability to spread people out. They sort of tighten things up, and I really don't understand why they're doing it.
Got a chance this week to talk to DJ Shockley. Kind of does similar jobs as us back there down in Atlanta. And one of the big things they did with Sarkisian is he came in and supposedly approached Matt Ryan and said, Matt, you've had a lot of coordinators in your life. What are the ones you like? What do you not like? Not guys, but plays.
You're saying they're trying to combo it.
They're basically trying to pick and choose from all the things he's had and put together this sort of amalgam of offense for Matt. But they don't feel like they're quite where they're going to be. Don't judge them now. It's kind of like the Patriots' defense. Question from that we have right now. Like, they're not where you think they'll be, but in December it'll be different. That's kind of how they feel about their offense. Now, their team is built a little like the Patriots in that some of their most dangerous players live in the backfield, yet those explosive plays you haven't seen as much. Two 17-point output games against AFC opponents and not the ones you'd wanted against here.
After averaging 33 points per game, last year's the most prolific offense in the league, and not protecting the ball as well. Ryan's thrown six picks in the last three games, and it's not just who's calling the plays, but where he's calling them from, because Sarkisian has gone from the sideline to the press box. What does that signal?
I don't know. And I never understand it, why it's easier to call games from down there or up there. If you're calling a thing, it's the same damn thing. The thing with them and him, I think the offense is built to be a front runner. Meaning, and that's not a negative connotation. That's, if I'm up 7 or 10, we got everything. And we put pressure on teams when we're up. When they got to panic and they got to come back, you could just see the deer in the headlight look a little bit with the quarterback, including himself, with the rest of that offense. And I think that was evident at the end of that Super Bowl that we called down in Houston. I just don't know if they have enough good veteran leadership to say, put it on me, man. Let's go. The way Brady does it when you're down.
One of the things that I kind of find interesting when you look at a team like this, maybe it's just that Patriot thing sort of
sexy and flashy
drilled into me. Yeah, sexy and flashy, but even when they're not sexy and flashy for a week or two, you still might expect sexy and flashy against you. And that's how Belichick preaches it here, and rightfully so. You can go on tape and watch them against Miami, watch them against Buffalo, and be like, yeah, not so good. But then you have to go back and start preparing. You go, wait a minute, I have to cover Julio Jones. Wait a minute, I got to cover Devontae Freeman in space. So you kind of expect their best, so you prepare for the best. And prior to these last two ugly games, they were putting it up at about 30 each week. So it's still there.
We didn't have Gronkowski either. Yeah.
So and that's the biggest point, and that's why this is such a new game, right? You didn't have Brandon Cooks, who used to torch them when he was in the South. Brandon Cooks has a really nice history against the Falcons. You now have Gronk. So that really changes the face
about
of all
Cooks.
This. Yeah, it just happens, right? But that changes the face of this game considerably.
But that's good.
And but you did have Malcolm Mitchell, and you had Julian Edelman, who both played big roles.
Malcolm had a big role in that game. Exactly. I'm just saying, from a game plan standpoint, you're going to be dealing with something different. You're going to have to account for Gronk, probably double in certain situations. They do have long, skinny linebackers. Those are fast guys, but they're like in the 230 range at 6'4". Some of them have chirped a little bit this week that they think they match up well with Gronk. But I mean, who does that?
Seattle did that, too. How'd that work out? Pittsburgh did it. How'd that work out?
KJ Wright, right? He's long and tall, but at some point, you're going to have to get there and outreach his reach. You can't do that.
And more than ironic, these two teams are coming off a Patriots come-from-behind win and a Falcons meltdown in a loss. We'll be back with the projections right after this from Zoe and Matt on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments. You, your advisor, and Putnam. Pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. And by Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner.
All right, we wrap up Patriots This Week with our predictions. Scott Zolak, who wins? Patriots-Falcons, who's the game changer?
Big spot, Sunday Night Football. Patriots win this one. 34-26, game changer, Chris Hogan. 8 catches, 2 touchdowns, 2 red area touchdowns.
Wow, I'm going to go Patriots 31-24, competitive game on a Sunday night. My game changer, Mike Gillisley. It's time. It's going to be that breakthrough night. It's going to be a 20-carry night over 100 yards.
You sure he's not in the doghouse?
A couple times. you get out of that for
them? They put them back in the game. You'll be all right.
And I think we'll end it on that note. Should be a lot of fun Sunday night. It's the Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons for Matt Chatham, Scott Zolak, and Don Banks. I'm Bob Sozzi. Thanks so much for joining us on Patriots This Week. So long, everyone.